Rothschild's War Manual. The Original Protocols. 1773.
Following is the War Manual, which Rothschild presented to his fellow Jews in 1773. This is probably the most important information to have, if you want to understand why the Rothschild family of terrorists are behind most of the wars and conflicts around the world, which are affecting everyone on this planet, with the ultimate goal being, our enslavement. This information is the key to successfully defending and counter-attacking. As the Chinese military general, Sun Tzu had once wrote, if you want to win the war, then you must know the enemy. This document details the methods used by Rothschild and all their minions to achieve their goal of world domination. I, Vasily, have prepared this so that it may be easily accessible, compared to the 5-hour-long, part 4 of my video titled, Corona Rothschild Protocols, which provides details regarding how this war manual is used in real life. Listen carefully to what he stated. Every word is important, since this is the first known draft of Rothschild's hard work. This draft is most likely the result of fine-tuning their war plans, after being kicked out of various countries over 1,000 times. It's an evolutionary process, whereby the Talmudic Jews, who believe that they have the right to rule the world, adjust their plans of attack, each time that they are kicked out. The inevitable result will be an almost flawless war manual. You should listen to this more than once, because, as I have stated in part 4 of Corona Rothschild Protocols, this is the key to the majority of the problems and wars that are occurring today. Also of significance, in the following writings, Rothschild stated that, capital is entirely in our hands. Notice this use of the word, entirely. This means that in 1773, the Rothschild family of terrorists were already extremely wealthy. This fact then suggests that the story of Rothschild's beginnings at the London Stock Exchange is incorrect. That is the story about Rothschild becoming wealthy, because he had his courier deliver news of the outcome of the battle at Waterloo, one day before the official government messenger. Rothschild was already very wealthy before that event, which occurred in 1815, 32 years after the presentation of this war manual during the meeting at his house. This is also why the other wealthy Jews came to the Rothschild house. If Rothschild was poor, I believe that the Jews would not have come to his house. Why have the Rothschilds and other Jews consistently been so wealthy? My guess is that this is the result of thousands of years of being cutthroat bandits, as detailed in part 2 of Corona Rothschild Protocols. And when I state that the Rothschild are a family of terrorists, I am not slandering the Rothschilds. I am simply making a factually based observation. As you listen to Rothschild's War Manual, you will learn how this family of terrorists understood the effect that terror had on people and how Rothschild made use of this information to further their goal of conquering the world. Now, listen carefully to part of Commander William Guy Carr's priceless book titled, Pawns in the Game, written in 1958.
In 1773, when Mayor Rothschild was only 30 years of age, he invited 12 other wealthy and influential men to meet him in Frankfurt. His purpose was to convince them that if they agreed to pool their resources, they could then finance and control the world revolutionary movement, and use it as their manual of action to win ultimate control of the wealth, natural resources, and manpower of the entire world. Rothschild revealed how the English Revolution had been organized. He pointed out the mistakes and errors that had been made. The revolutionary period had been too long. The elimination of reactionaries had not been accomplished with sufficient speed and ruthlessness. The planned reign of terror, by which the subjugation of the masses was to be accomplished speedily, had not been put into effective operation. Even after all these mistakes had been made, the initial purpose of the revolution had been achieved. The bankers who instigated the revolution had established control of the national economy and consolidated the national debt. By means of intrigue carried out on an international scale, they had increased the national debt steadily by loaning the money to fight the wars and rebellions they had fomented since 1694. Basing his arguments on logic and sound reasoning, Meyer Rothschild pointed out that the financial results obtained as the results of the English Revolution would be as nothing when compared to the financial rewards to be obtained by a French Revolution, provided those present agreed to unity of purpose and put into effect his carefully thought out and revised revolutionary plan. The project would be backed by all the power that could be purchased with their pooled resources. This agreement reached, Meyer Rothschild unfolded his revolutionary plan. By clever manipulation of their combined wealth, it would be possible to create such adverse economic conditions that the masses would be reduced to a state bordering on starvation by unemployment. By use of cleverly conceived propaganda, it would be easy to place the blame for the adverse economic conditions on the king, his court, the nobles, the church, industrialists, and the employers of labor. Their paid propagandists would arouse feelings of hatred and revenge against the ruling classes by exposing all real and alleged cases of extravagance, licentious conduct, injustice, oppression, and persecution. They would also invent infamies to bring into disrepute others who might, if left alone, interfere with their overall plans. After the general introduction to build up an enthusiastic reception for the plot he was about to unfold, Rothschild turned to a manuscript, and proceeded to read a carefully prepared plan of action. The following is what I have been assured, is a condensed version of the plot, by which the conspirators hope to obtain ultimate, undisputed, control of the wealth, natural resources, and manpower of the entire world. Plan of Action Point 1. The speaker started to unfold the plot, by saying that because the majority of men were inclined to evil, rather than to good, the best results in governing them could be obtained by using violence and terrorism, and not by academic discussions. The speaker reasoned that in the beginning human society had been subject to brutal and blind force, which was afterwards changed to law. He argued that law was force, only in disguise. He reasoned it was logical to conclude that the laws of nature lies in force. Plan of Action Point 2. He next asserted that political freedom is an idea and not a fact. He stated that in order to usurp political power, all that was necessary was to preach liberalism, so that the electorate, for the sake of an idea, would yield some of their power and prerogatives, which they could then gather together into their own hands. Plan of Action Point 3. The speaker asserted that the power of gold had usurped the power of liberal rulers even then. That is 1773. He reminded his audience that there had been a time when faith had ruled, but stated that once freedom had been substituted for faith, the people did not know how to use it in moderation. He argued that because of this fact, it was logical to assume that they could use the idea of freedom to bring about class wars. He pointed out that it was immaterial to the success of his plan whether the established governments were destroyed by internal or external foes, because the victor had of necessity to seek the aid of capital, which
is entirely in our hands.
Plan of Action Point 4. He argued that the use of any and all means to reach their final goal was justified on the grounds that the ruler who governed by the moral code was not a skilled politician, because he left himself vulnerable and in an unstable position on his throne. He said,
those who wish to rule must be cunning and to make believe, because great national qualities like frankness and honesty are vices in politics.
Plan of Action Point 5. He asserted,
our right lies in force. The word right is an abstract thought and proves nothing. I find a new right to attack by the right of the strong, and to scatter to the winds all existing forces of order and regulation, to reconstruct all existing institutions, or to become the sovereign lord of all those who left to us the rights to their powers by laying them down voluntarily in their liberalism.
Plan of Action Point 6. He then admonished his listeners with these words.
The power of our resources must remain invisible, until the very moment when it has gained such strength that no cunning or force can undermine it.
He warned them that any deviation from the line of the strategical plan he was making known to them would risk bringing to naught
the labors of centuries.
Plan of Action Point 7. He next advocated the use of mob psychology to obtain control of the masses. He reasoned that the might of the mob is blind, senseless, and unreasoning, and ever at the mercy of suggestion from any side. He stated,
only a despotic ruler can rule the mob efficiently, because without absolute despotism there can be no existence for civilization, which was carried out, not by the masses, but by the guide, whosoever that person might be.
He warned,
the moment the mob seizes freedom in its hands, it quickly turns to anarchy.
Plan of Action Point 8. He next advocated that the use of alcoholic liquors, drugs, moral corruption, and all forms of vice be used systematically by their agentors to corrupt the morals of the youth of the nations. He recommended that the special agentors should be trained as tutors, lackeys, governesses, clerks, and by our women in the places of dissipation frequented by the goyim. He added,
in the number of these last I count also the so-called society ladies, who become voluntary followers of the others in corruption and luxury. We must not stop at bribery, deceit, and treachery when they should serve towards the attainment of our end.
Note, the word agentia means the complete organized body of agents, spies, counter-spies, blackmailers, saboteurs, underworld characters, racketeers, and everything and everybody outside the law, which enables the international conspirators to further their secret plans and ambitions.
Plan of Action Point 9. Turning to politics, he claimed they had the right to seize property by any means and without hesitation, if by doing so, they secured submission and sovereignty. He pronounced,
our state marching along the path of peaceful conquest has the right to replace the horrors of wars by less noticeable and more satisfactory sentences of death necessary to maintain the terror, which tends to produce blind submission.
Plan of Action Point 10. Dealing with the use of slogans, he said,
in ancient times we were the first to put the words liberty, equality, and fraternity into the mouths of the masses. Words repeated to this day by stupid poll parrots, words which the would-be wise men of the goyim could make nothing of in their abstractness, and did not note the contradiction of their meaning and interrelation.
He claimed the words brought under their directions and control legions
who bore our banners with enthusiasm.
He reasoned that there is no place in nature for equality, liberty, or fraternity. He said,
on the ruins of the natural and genealogical aristocracy of the Goyim, we have set up the aristocracy of money. The qualifications for this aristocracy is wealth, which is dependent upon us.
Note by Vasily, there are 2 points numbered 10 in the book. I have renumbered the items after number 10, so as to be correct.
Plan of Action Point 11. He next expounded his theories regarding war. In 1773, he set down a principle which the governments of Britain and the United States publicly announced as their joint policy in 1939. He said it should be the policy of those present to foment wars, but to so direct the peace conference so that neither of the combatants obtained territorial gains. He said the wars should be directed so that the nations engaged on both sides would be placed further in their debt and in the power of our agentors. Plan of Action Point 12. He next dealt with administration. He told those present that they must use their wealth to have candidates chosen for public office who would be
servile and obedient to our commands, so they may readily be used as pawns in our game. By the learned and genius men, we will appoint to operate behind the scenes of government as official advisers.
He added,
the men we appoint as advisers will have been bred, reared, and trained from childhood in accordance with our ideas, to rule the affairs of the whole world.
Plan of Action Point 13. He dealt with propaganda, and explained how their combined wealth could control all outlets of public information, while they remained in the shade, and clear of blame, regardless of what the repercussions might be due to the publication of libels, slanders, or untruths. The speaker said,
thanks to the press, we have got gold in our hands, notwithstanding the fact that we had to gather it out of the oceans of blood and tears. But it has paid us, even though we have sacrificed many of our own people. Each victim on our side is worth 1,000 goyim.
Plan of Action Point 14. He next explained the necessity of having their agentors always come out into the open and appear on the scene when conditions had reached their lowest ebb and the masses had been subjugated by means of wanton terror. He pointed out that
when it was time to restore order, they should do it in such a way that the victims would believe they had been the prey of criminals and irresponsible.
He said,
by executing the criminals and lunatics, after they have carried out our preconceived reign of terror, we can make ourselves appear as the saviors of the oppressed and the champions of the workers.
The speaker then added,
we are interested in just the opposite, in the diminution, the killing out of the goyim.
Plan of Action Point 15. He next explained how industrial depressions and financial panics could be brought about and used to serve their purpose, saying,
enforced unemployment and hunger, imposed on the masses because of the power we have to create shortages of food, will create the right of capital to rule more surely than it was given to the real aristocracy and by the legal authority of kings.
He claimed that by having their agentors control the mob, could then be used to wipe out all who dared to stand in their way. Plan of Action Point 16. The infiltration into continental Freemasonry was next discussed extensively. The speaker stated that their purpose would be to take advantage of the facilities and secrecy Freemasonry had to offer. He pointed out that they could organize their own Grand Orient lodges within Blue Freemasonry, in order to carry on their subversive activities and hide the true nature of their work under the cloak of philanthropy. He stated that all members initiated into their Grand Orient lodges should be used for proselytizing purposes and for spreading their atheistic materialistic ideology amongst the Goyim. He ended this phase of the discussion with the words,
when the hour strikes for our sovereign lord of all the world to be crowned, these same hands will sweep away everything that might stand in his way.
Plan of Action Point 17. He next expounded the value of systematic deceptions, pointing out that their agentors should be trained in the use of high-sounding phrases and the use of popular slogans. They should make the masses the most lavish of promises. He observed,
the opposite of what has been promised can always be done afterwards, that is of no consequence.
He reasoned that by using such words as freedom and liberty, the Goyim could be stirred up to such a pitch of patriotic fervor that they could be made to fight even against the laws of God and nature. He added,
and for this reason, after we obtain control, the very name of God will be erased from the lexicon of life.
Note, the lexicon of life he referred to was Almighty God's plan of creation. Plan of Action Point 18. He then detailed the plans for revolutionary war, the art of street fighting, and outlined the pattern for the reign of terror, which he insisted must accompany every revolutionary effort.
Because it is the most economical way to bring the population to speedy subjection.
Plan of Action Point 19. Diplomacy was next discussed. After all wars, secret diplomacy must be insisted upon.
In order that our agentures, masquerading as political, financial, and economic advisers, can carry out our mandates without fear of exposing who are the secret power behind national and international affairs.
The speaker then told those present that by secret diplomacy, they must obtain such control,
that the nations cannot come to even an inconsiderable private agreement, without our secret agents having a hand in it.
Plan of Action Point 20. Ultimate World Government, the goal. To reach this goal, the speaker told them,
it will be necessary to establish huge monopolies, reservoirs of such colossal riches, that even the largest fortunes of the Goyim will depend on us, to such an extent that they will go to the bottom together with the credit of the governments on the day after the great political smash.
The speaker then added,
you gentlemen here present, who are economists, just strike an estimate of the significance of this combination.
Plan of Action Point 21. Economic War. Plans to rob the Goyim of their landed properties and industries were then discussed. A combination of high taxes, and unfair competition, was advocated to bring about the economic ruin of the Goyim, as far as their national financial interests and investments were concerned. In the international field, he felt they could be encouraged to price themselves out of the markets. This could be achieved by the careful control of raw materials, organized agitation amongst the workers, for shorter hours and higher pay, and by subsidizing competitors. The speaker warned his co-conspirators that they must arrange matters, and control conditions, so that
the increased wages obtained by the workers will not benefit them in any way.
Plan of Action Point 22. Armaments. It was suggested that the building up of armaments for the purpose of making the Goyim destroy each other should be launched on such a colossal scale that in the final analysis,
there will only be the masses of the proletariat left in the world, with a few millionaires devoted to our cause, and police and soldiers sufficient to protect our interests.
Plan of Action Point 23. The New Order. The members of the One World Government would be appointed by the dictator. He would pick men from amongst the scientists, the economists, the financiers, the industrialists, and from the millionaires because
in substance everything will be settled by the question of figures.
Plan of Action Point 24. Importance of youth. The importance of capturing the interest of youth was emphasized with the admonition that
our agentures should infiltrate into all classes and levels of society and government for the purpose of fooling, bemusing, and corrupting the younger members of society by teaching them theories and principles we know to be false.
Plan of Action Point 25. National and international laws should not be changed but should be used as they are to destroy the civilization of the Goyim.
Merely by twisting them into a contradiction of the interpretation, which first masks the law and afterwards hides it altogether. Our ultimate aim is to substitute arbitration for law.
The speaker then told his listeners,
you may think the Goyim will rise upon us with arms, but in the West we have against this possibility an organization of such appalling terror that the very stoutest hearts quail. The underground, the metropolitans, the subterranean corridors, these will be established in the capitals and cities of all countries before that danger threatens.
The use of the word West has great significance. It makes it plain that Rothschild was addressing men who had joined the World Revolutionary Movement, which was started in the Pale of Settlement in the East. It must be remembered that before Amschel Moses Bauer, that is Rothschild, settled down in Frankfurt, Germany, he had followed his trade as a gold and silversmith, traveling extensively in the East of Europe, where he had undoubtedly met the men his son Mayer Amschel addressed, after he developed from a moneylender into a banker, and established the house of Rothschild in the Jundenstrasse, where the above meeting is said to have taken place in 1773. As far as can be ascertained, the original plan of the conspiracy ended at the point where it terminated above. I am satisfied that the documents which fell into the hands of Professor S. Nihlus in 1901, and which he published under the title, The Jewish Peril, in 1905 in Russia, were an enlargement of the original plot. There appears to be no change in the first section, but various editions disclose how the conspirators had used Darwinism, Marxism, and even Nietzscheism. More important still, the documents discovered in 1901 disclose how Zionism was to be used. It must be remembered that Zionism was only organized in 1897. This matter is referred to later when the intrigue leading up to the abdication of King Edward VIII is explained. The translation Mr. Victor Marsden made of The Jewish Peril was published by the Britain's Publishing Society, London, England, under the title The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, in 1921. This book is also discussed. It appears logical to say that the discovery of the later document confirms the existence of the earlier one. Little, if anything, is changed, but considerable material is added, probably due to the rapid development of the international conspiracy. The only point upon which there seems to be grounds for disagreement is in regard to the titles chosen by Professor Nihlus and Mr. Marsden for their books. Mr. Marsden definitely states the contents of his book are the Protocols of the Meetings of the Learned Elders of Zion, whereas it would appear it was a plot presented to money lenders, goldsmiths, industrialists, economists, and others, by Mayer Amschel Rothschild, who had graduated from money lender to banker. Once the spirit of revolt against constituted authority had been aroused within the hearts and minds of the masses, the actual revolutionary effort would be carried out under the impetus of a preconceived reign of terror. The reign of terror would be conceived by the leaders of the Jewish Illuminati. They in turn would have their agents infiltrate into the newly organized French Freemasonry, and establish therein lodges of Grand Orient Masonry, to be used as the revolutionary underground, and as their instrument for proselytizing the doctrine of atheistic dialectical and historical materialism. Mayor Rothschild ended his discourse by pointing out that if proper precautions were taken, their connection with the revolutionary movement need never be known. The question may well be asked, how can it be proved these secret meetings were held? And, if they were held, how is it possible to prove what matters were discussed at such meetings? The answer is simple. The devilish plot was made known by an act of God. In 1785, a courier was galloping madly on horseback from Frankfurt to Paris carrying detailed information regarding the world revolutionary movement in general, and instructions for the planned French Revolution in particular. The instructions originated with the Jewish Illuminati in Germany and were addressed to Grand Master of the Grand Orient Masons in France. The Grand Orient Lodges had been established as the revolutionary underground by the Duc d'Orléans after he, as Grand Master of French Masonry, had been initiated into the Jewish Illuminati in Frankfurt by Mirabeau. The courier was struck by lightning while passing through Ratisbon, and killed. The documents he carried fell into the hands of the police, who turned them over to the Bavarian government. A record of historical events told in chronological order connects the House of Rothschild with the Jewish Illuminati in Frankfurt and the Illuminati within French Freemasonry known as the Grand Orient Lodges, as will be shown.
Note by Vasily. This war manual is the key to understanding what is happening in the world today, but only if you understand that we are at war. If you think that we are not at war, then you are wrong. I have explained this in detail in parts 2 and 3 of Corona Rothschild Protocols. It doesn't matter what you think, for example, if you are a peace-loving person who wouldn't even dream of causing harm to others. What matters is what your enemy is thinking and doing, and if he is attacking you. If you are being attacked by non-conventional means, that is by stealth, and you are killed or injured, either physically or emotionally or psychologically, and you don't understand that you were attacked, then the Rothschild and all their minions have achieved one of the Rothschild goals, as detailed above. Remember that the Jew cries out in pain as he hits you. In other words, the Jew attacks whilst creating the impression of being the victim. This is a very cunning psychological move, which has been developed and practiced for thousands of years. These Talmudic Jews have been at war with us for over 5,000 years, as is confirmed by the Egyptian carvings in stone, that is, hieroglyphs. I have included the supporting evidence in parts 2 and 3 of my video titled, Corona Rothschild Protocols, which includes a quote from a Jewish hieroglyph expert, who confirmed that Jews have been cutthroat bandits for at least 5,000 years. In other words, Jews, and in particular pure-blooded Jews who follow the Talmud, have had an endless hatred towards non-Jews for over 5,000 years, and they have been stealing and killing from non-Jews for over 5,000 years. So anyone who thinks that they can change the Jews' 5,000 years old behavior, for example by being nice to the Jew, is living in fairy land. They are delusional and not living in the real world. If the Jew hasn't changed for over 5,000 years, then there is no way that they will change now. Keep in mind that I am referring to the pure-blooded Jews who follow the Talmud. There are many Jews who have mixed blood and hence have changed from this megalomaniac mentality. Never forget that the Rothschild family of terrorists, who are the king of the Jews, are still following their 1773 manual, which has since been updated, so as to continually adjust their methods of attack. For example, the corona vaccine and all the new and improved, self-replicating, spike protein vaccines that they have developed and already given to one of Rothschild's enemies, the Japanese. Remember that the Japanese are hated by the Rothschilds because of the help that the Japanese provided to Hitler. Also, forget about placing blame on secret societies, or secret groups, or using stupid labels to refer to the Talmudic Jewish enemy. Referring to the enemy as the elite, or the globalists, or the one-worlders, or the cabal, or the bankers, or the Zionists, or any other label, is avoiding naming the Rothschild as the head of this ruthless Jewish army, who are at war with us. Placing blame on Freemasons or Illuminati or World Economic Forum or United Nations or World Health Organization or the ADL is pointless, since it avoids naming the Rothschild family of terrorists, who control all of those organizations and many more, which is again in keeping with their war manual, namely remaining invisible. If you want to eliminate a cancer, you need to get rid of the source of the cancer, followed by all of its roots. If you eliminate one root, for example one of the organizations I mentioned, without eliminating the source, then the source will continue to grow and attack, virtually unimpeded, until it has taken control of the host. Hence, if for example you attack the ADL, the effort is wasted, since Rothschild remains behind the scenes, virtually unaffected and laughing. I recommend you read or listen to all of the Rothschild's war manual very carefully, so that you can understand how the Rothschild are attacking, so as to weaken and kill us, and steal all the wealth, as is partially detailed in my video titled, The Great Red Dragon. Hopefully, if enough people find out about the Rothschild War Manual, then we may eliminate this attack by the Rothschild family of devils, and we may all live in peace and have a better quality of life. Finally, always be alert to agents, who provide cover for the Rothschilds. The agents often seem trustworthy, because they lure in people, by talking about obvious issues involving Jews, but they cover up critical information. The following person, using the name Rye Dawson, is one example of these agents. He lures people in by claiming the obvious fact, that Israel was behind 9/11. But anyone that discusses other facts, that go beyond 9/11, is attacked by Rye Dawson. For example, for many years, Rye Dawson was slandering Brendan O'Connell, who was trying to expose the Israeli spies, under the name, Unit 8200. Rye Dawson slandered Brendan O'Connell, regarding this issue. Now we know that Unit 8200 is a real Israeli spy unit, which is working for Rothschild. Let's hear what this agent has to say about the Rothschilds, the King of the Jew, and the blatant slandering used to cover up the Rothschilds.
Now, but my video today, I want to talk about something else. Buzzwords. Because it's a personal annoyance to me. During the last Ron Paul campaign, the big buzzword, because it had been on Alex Jones, was CFR. And all these turkeys running around going, CFR! CFR! Bilderberg! Mossad, CIA, MI6, blah blah blah. Just packaged everything together like that. Didn't really know what they were talking about. Have no idea what the Council on Foreign Relations really does. No clue. Just sounded cool. This year's big buzzword is Rothschilds. I've been explaining central banking to people since 1997. And if you want a good film on it, because I know you're not going to read, the people I need to talk to aren't going to read, watch Money Masters. Particularly in the middle, when Bill still explains to people that this isn't how it works anymore. No single person simply owns a bank. And to just say Rothschild, Rothschild, Rothschild is oversimplistic and stupid. I'm paraphrasing. But it's true. Please stop it. Okay? People understand the history of Nathan Rothschild and the Red Shields, and how central banking works. But they're not the only family involved. That's not how banks work today. And you sound really ignorant to anyone that's not a newbie on the central banking issue. So, of the people on Facebook and everywhere else is just screaming Rothschild, Rothschild, Rothschild about everything. Say, oh, no matter what your issue is, no matter what you bring up, oh, well, above that's the Rothschilds. Everyone's pulling all the puppet strings, da-da-da-da. Oh, all these sheeple, they don't know. Nobody, you don't know. You don't know jack shit. I know David Icke, whatever his name is, the aliens are really here on Earth and Jonestown and stuff, like promoting Rothschild, this and that now. And of course, Rothschild's one of the Jewish groups, so maybe there's a reason there to focus more on that. I'm not sure if there's some other motives behind that. But I think more than likely it's because of the little animated video that came out about the Rothschilds, which was simplistic enough for most dumbasses to understand. And they're the ones going around that just oversimplifying everything. Now, I'm not giving the Rothschilds a pass. Screw them. Definitely a huge part of history. But that is not how it is today. That is way oversimplified. It's way oversimplified to just say a family is controlling everything from some smoking room of the central hub of central banks.
Ryan Dawson is a small-time agent who is distracting people from the Rothschild, and he has more recently revealed his true colors by delusionally claiming that the Arabs are behind 9/11. However, the biggest disinformation agent is that scumbag Alex Jones. Alex has some very cunning Jews pulling his strings to ensure that the Rothschild factor is never mentioned, or if it is, then he has various diversionary tactics, the main one being to blame the Nazis. If you listen carefully to Alex Jones, it is obvious that for the past over 15 years, he has been doing Rothschild's bidding by blaming the Nazis. These days the majority of the media is blaming the Nazis for just about everything, even though their claims are nonsense and plain stupid. Nevertheless, this action exposes the extent of media control which Rothschild has, as he had confirmed above, in 1773, when he was 30 years old. Since my BitChute channel is blocked in most European countries, including the UK and Russia, and Rumble have censored part 4 of my video titled, Corona Rothschild Protocols, please feel free to upload my videos to other channels or platforms or websites.